From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in the words of a Mexican immigrant who has a few things to say about why people are coming to the United States. Here are the words of Micho Alvarez. Quote, I came from Mexico, but there's a lot of people here who, when they hear that, they think I crawled out of hell. We're the unknown Americans, the ones no one wants to know because they've been told they're supposed to be scared of us. And maybe if they did take the time to get to know us, they might realize that we're not that bad. Maybe even that we're a lot like them. And who would they hate then? The whole thing is very, very complicated. Does anyone ever talk about why people are crossing? I can promise you it's not with some grand ambition to come here and ruin everything. People are desperate, man. End quote. Now, you might think that Micho Alvarez made those remarks in response to what Donald Trump said this past summer about Mexicans coming into this country. But actually, Micho made those remarks before Trump's comments, and Micho Alvarez is a character in a novel called The Book of Unknown Americans by Christina Henriquez. The book takes us into the immigrant experience for a number of people, families, those who are trying to build a new life, and most importantly, those who are trying to figure out if a town in Delaware can feel like home. The author is coming to Rochester tomorrow night, but first let's talk about the immigrant experience with Christina Henriquez. Welcome to the program, Christina. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Megan Mack, our producer, is here with me in studio, and Megan and I spent the last 18 hours reading this book, so we're both up to speed, up late and up early this morning reading. Megan Mack, you want to share some of your thoughts about what you read?
Yes, I found this book very, very powerful. And throughout the 18 hours, I was drawn into all these personal stories of what it means to be an immigrant, what it means to make a new home for yourself, a new life for yourself in a new place. And the stories were so personal, so human, and I felt very just... The heart in this book is incredible. If you haven't had a chance to read it, please read it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And we're going to be getting into more about why Megan and I feel that way. Let me also welcome Katie Festa, who's the Library Advancement Program Manager for the University of Rochester River Campus Libraries. And Katie, welcome to the program here. You've got an event tomorrow night, Christina Henriquez, tomorrow night. What are the details?
Yes, it's tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the Rush Rees Library in our Hawkins Carlson room. It's free and open to the public, free parking as well, so there's that. And Christina will be speaking, and we're really excited to have her.
Well, it's a timely subject, and Christina, I imagine dovetails so interestingly with Donald Trump, his remarks this summer. I saw you tweeted the other day, you sent Donald Trump your book. You're not sure he's read it yet. I have to say it felt like Micho's passage was written directly in response to his comments, but that wasn't true. You wrote this long before that big flare-up this summer, right?
I did, yeah. And actually, it took me 5 years to write the book,
yeah.
So I was working on it for a long time before any of this kind of blew up. But, it's amazing, the whole time I was writing it, it was so much in the news even then, and I just felt like in some ways I wanted to respond to some of the coverage that I was hearing about immigrants and about Latino immigrants in particular, and I felt like, there's a different side of the story, and I kind of wanted to tell that different side.
I love some of the remarks you've made about the difference between immigration and immigrants, immigration being a system, immigrants are people. And this book is filled with people, very human stories. I do wonder if you saw what happened, unfold this summer in the presidential campaign, if you were thinking, wow, this just feels like no one has been listening to either your book or some of the people who've come into this country. Did you feel that way?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the rhetoric is, it's so divisive, and that's the point of it. It's playing on people's fears and these ideas that people have about who is threatening and who's desirable and who's not and all of this. And I mean, when I went into the book, it is described from time to time as being a book about immigration, and I do try to make that point that to me it's really not. Like, it's a book, and it was always a book from the beginning for me, that's about immigrants, which to me was the people who were behind these stories that we were hearing. And they're people with just very human basic desires and wants and fears and things that I think anybody who comes to the book can probably relate to. And that was part of the point for me, was to, show and recover a sense of humanity in these people that are, very often vilified.
So a little bit of your own history first. Your father from Panama, your mother is from New Jersey?
That's right.
Okay, and so you said that growing up, I've heard you say in talks that in some ways you felt growing up that the Panamanian part of your background was not, you know, sort of considered as important or valued. You know, Latino literature, art, those kind of things were just not as valued as other kinds. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
I think that was kind of the message that I felt like I was receiving, because I was a kid who, you know, I was born in the United States, raised in the United States. I felt very American, but I would go every year to Panama to visit my family there. And I had these really rich experiences of going there, but it was interesting to me when I started to feel like maybe I wanted to become a writer that, you know, it did not occur to me to write those stories down. And I think that's kind of what I was talking about when I made those comments, which is that when I was growing up and all of the books that I was reading and all of the movies that I was seeing and all of the television that I was watching, I never saw the Panamanian side of myself reflected in any of those things. And so essentially what those things were saying to me was that, you know, the side of me that was from my mother's heritage was the side that had any value. It was the only side that anybody maybe was interested in hearing. You know, that was kind of what I internalized, at least. And it took me a really long time to figure out that maybe I could write down the stories that I had and that I had gathered all my life from going to Panama. And the thing that kind of turned it around for me was that I found a copy of The House on Mango Street by Sandra Cisneros. And as soon as I started reading that, I thought, oh, these other stories matter too.
Your book has people from many different places, a Mexican family, Panamanians, et cetera. And
Venezuelan. Colombian, yeah.
Yep. And so sometimes when we talk about immigrants or immigration in this country, we talk about Latino immigration as if it's one thing, one group of people, one country, you know, one sort of desire. And your book breaks that apart almost immediately. Was that part of the goal?
For sure. Yeah, I wanted to, you know, a lot of this book was about poking at stereotypes. And I think one of our kind of just part of our narrative about immigration is that everybody from Latin America is kind of part of one monolithic entity, you know, and I wanted to really pry that apart and show, no, that, you know, there's differences, obviously, between someone who's from Guatemala and someone who's from Mexico and someone who's from Venezuela and someone who's from Peru and, you know, all of these different places, and really differentiate them as characters and as countries while at the same time showing, you know, these kind of universal, fundamental beliefs that they had and values and, you know, all of the things that, again, just make them really human.
We're talking to Cristina Enriquez, who is the author of The Book of Unknown Americans, a critically acclaimed novel. She'll be in Rochester tomorrow night. The book tells the story of immigrants, real people, you know, families and their struggle. And in a second, Megan and I are going to kind of dive into a conversation with the author about the actual stories that unfold in the book itself. But I want to hit one important part of the theme as well, because Megan and I were talking before the show began and gave Megan a little quiz, Christina. I said, if there's one word that you would say the book is about, what's the one word? And Megan actually came up with a lot of words that I thought were absolutely tied into the book, from love and hope and trauma even. But
I failed the quiz.
But you
failed the quiz.
Well, Christina, you said the most important word is home, yes?
For me, it was. You know, I had a teacher once who said, when you finish kind of the draft of a project, if you can boil it down then to one word, then it will help you, you know, as kind of a guiding light as you move forward and kind of, you know, do all your revisions and all that stuff. And so for me, that word really was home. But I think a lot of the words that you just mentioned that Megan said actually sort of feed into that idea of home. You know, it was really so much a sense about these people who are trying to find a sense of belonging in the world, which to me is, you know, kind of the definition of home. I think it doesn't even have to do necessarily with a geographical place. It's more about a feeling of connection that you have.
Yeah, and so at various points in the book, there are hints at just how hugely important it is to feel, no matter where you are, to feel like where you are is home to you. You know, early on, the family is looking up saying, well, you know, we're under the same sun now than we were back in Mexico. Or even that first night for the main family in the book from Mexico, you know, there is that sense of being in a foreign place, that the darkness is different, the sounds are different, the walls are different. And so sometimes when we talk about on this program about people who live in poverty, some people have a hard time thinking, well, how come they wouldn't want to move? Or how come they, you know, this doesn't change or that doesn't change? But there is a rhythm of home that we build for ourselves no matter where we are. And that is reflected in this book. So, Christina, I'm curious to know, first of all, when you're growing up with your own family, what would your father have said? And I'm curious if you've talked to him over the years about when he and your mother were starting a family, how long did it take for him to feel like the United States was home?
I'm not sure if I've ever asked him how long it took for him to feel like this was his home, but I know that I've asked him now where he would say was home, and he absolutely says the United States. You know, my dad's been here now for more than 40 years, which is longer than the time that he had spent living in Panama. And, you know, I think very much he feels like he's sort of written his story on this land and that this is the place, you know, where he claims and feels is his home. And he goes back to Panama, and then, you know, there's something about going back there that lights him up in a different way. He's really happy when he's in Panama, but I think in many ways he feels like, you know, the country has passed him by since he's been there. It's been so long since he's actually lived there. You know, if someone were to ask him, for example, on the street for directions, he might not be able to tell them. And I think there's a certain kind of pain that's associated with that. But on the other side of it, you know, he really loves the United States and has a really fierce loyalty and devotion to a place where he feels like, you know, he has spent most of his life.
Sure. And, you know, the experience of the characters in the book, the Book of Unknown Americans, even for me, I think back to this summer when my wife and my young son and I were traveling overseas. And, you know, he's such a good sleeper. And we think, well, how come the first few mornings were kind of rough? But then I read research that indicates no matter where you go, no matter how comfortable it is, the first night for anybody, adults, kids, et cetera, is tougher because that's not your home and it doesn't even feel like home yet. You know, if you're lucky enough to stay somewhere for a week, by 3 or 4 days in, you're into a rhythm, you can sleep. But that first night, no matter where you are, even if it's in a posh surroundings, no matter where it is, it's tougher because it's not home.
And I mean, there is something to that. I mean, the lines that you pulled out, which I'm so glad you did, because no one ever quotes those lines, and I always love them, but about how just even the texture of the air and, you know, the depth of the darkness, how all of those really subtle things can seem so different just if you're in a different place, and how they can put you off balance.
I actually found those, to me, some of the most powerful moments in the book. I'm sort of a little thing kind of a person, and I found those to be some of the most powerful because I can relate to them. Just, we all know the darkness. If we all wake up, no matter where we are, if we wake up in the middle of the night in our home, we know what the darkness should look like.
Right.
We know what the creaks in the house sound like, and we would know if something is creaking that is not supposed to be there. And I can relate to that. And I found myself immediately relating to this family that's coming to this new place. And then, again, to look at the little things, but the things that hit me, and in a second I'm going to hand it over to Megan to help us walk through some of the stories of this book. But, I mean, I was really moved by the challenges that an immigrant family, a Mexican family with very little English, would have. They're standing in line at a gas station just trying to buy food, and they're struggling to buy food because the dad gives a $20 bill thinking it's going to cover, I think the bill came to 21 or 22 bucks.
22.
And but he doesn't understand that that wasn't enough, and the cashier's waiting for more, and there's people in line waiting behind them, and they're tense, and the family is freaking out. And that little moment to me just encapsulated so much of how we think the big things are hard, but even the little things would be really difficult. And I imagine, Christina, that was part of what you were trying to tell us.
Yeah, I mean, it's so awful in that moment. Like you said, all these people are standing up behind them and, like, craning their necks to see what's going on, and they're looking at each other like, what do we do? And, you know, and they don't know enough English to be able to ask what to do. And, you know, and it's just this terrible moment where you feel like all you're trying to do is get to a new place and blend in and just buy some hot dogs, you know, which is basically what they're trying to do, and it becomes so difficult. But I think, you know, you don't even... if you've never been an immigrant, if you've traveled, as you say, you know, and you're out of your sort of comfort zone, you know what that feels like. You know, I mean, I know, I think I was drawing on my experiences of growing up, being in Panama, I don't speak fluent Spanish. So a lot of times when I get there, I feel really out of place. And I remember recently where I was trying to do something at a drugstore, and it was sort of a similar experience where I couldn't communicate very well with the cashier, and I didn't really understand what was going on, and I could suddenly feel all these people staring at me and looking at me, and I was kind of creating a scene, and I was like, I just want to get out of here and buy this sunscreen or whatever it was I was trying to buy. You know, and those things are very difficult, but they can scar you. I mean, even those very small things can really sort of change you and change your experience of being in a new place.
On the subject of language, by the way, Christina, do you also find that if you travel to Panama, you may not speak fluent Spanish, but if you travel to Puerto Rico, the Spanish might not be exactly the same. Some of the slang is different. And even for immigrants to this country, you know, there's going to be little hiccups here, let alone trying to speak English. But, I mean, it's right. A much more textured world than just saying, speak English, speak Spanish, you know, communicate.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that was, you know, back to the point of trying to differentiate these characters who are from all different countries all over Latin America. That was one of the points that I tried to make subtly from time to time, was how, you know, the Spanish can vary even from country to country, and how, you know, for like someone from Venezuela and someone from Panama, those are considered similar Spanish, so that sometimes that can provide a connection between two people who are from those countries. But, you know, from other countries whose Spanish varies more, it can feel like a wedge between you, even though, you know, to an outsider, you might think, well, everyone's just speaking Spanish.
Sure.
Aren't they? But, yeah.
I had a friend in college when I was learning Spanish. We had a friend from Spain, and I remember saying, no me importa, which is, you know, I don't care. And he looked at me funny, and I said, what? And he said, I just asked you a question, and you gave me the middle finger. And I said, no, I didn't. I did not. And he said, in Spain, we say me da igual, which is, you know, either way, it's fine. He said, we don't say no me importa unless we're trying to be rude. And I said, But that's not what I was taught by Senor Padilla. So, you know, I had a teacher from Mexico. So it's just that little moment, I had offended somebody, not even realizing it. So it's the little moments that we start to see with the characters who just want to make their way. And then my last question on the subject of home, before we start to really move through the book, is this. There's a moment early on where the family, where the mom, Alma, meets the landlord. And she has this moment of comfort because he can speak the language. He's very warm. He's assuring her that it is safe. And that's the first moment that I actually thought to myself, boy, it's interesting looking at somebody who's trying to create a home and feel like a new place is home. But I wonder, what can we do as a community to make people feel like home? Can we all do a little bit more? What would you say to that, Christina?
I mean, I think all of us just as human beings can always do a little bit more to go out of our way to extend a little bit of compassion. And even, you know, sometimes it's really as simple as if you're walking down the street, just sort of making a different assumption about somebody. You know, it doesn't necessarily always mean that you're going to talk to that person or that you're going to do anything in particular for that person, but the changing your thoughts and being conscious about doing it from time to time will eventually translate, you know, to how you treat other people and then how we, just as human beings and, you know, as larger communities, treat other people and care for other people. And, it's so important because, you know, we really are all connected and dependent upon each other, and the whole thing here on Earth works a little bit better when we all take care of each other.
The book is called The Book of Unknown Americans, a novel by Christina Henriquez, and she's coming to Rochester tomorrow night. Katie Festa is the Library Advancement Program Manager at the River Campus Libraries for U of R. And for our listeners who might have missed it, the details on tomorrow night. Go ahead.
Yes, tomorrow night is the lecture at Rush Rees Library in the University of Rochester campus at 7 p.m., open to the public with free parking, no cost to attend. Everyone's welcome.
Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, and there you go. You can meet Christina. You can hear her talk about these issues. Listeners, I'd love to hear from you this hour on the subject of either your own experiences with immigration, questions you might have about it, or frankly, your thoughts on creating a welcoming community. That's kind of the theme for both of our hours of the program today, and that's what we're talking about with Christina Henriquez this hour. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. It's at Evan Dawson on Twitter. Our producer, Megan Mack, is on Twitter at mmackmedia, or you can email me, edawson@wxxi.org. Megan Mack, I was concerned early on that this family who comes in with this daughter who has a kind of a brain injury, I was concerned that, that something was going to go wrong, because she kind of hinted, the very opening pages hint at it. But I also found myself immediately feeling affection for them. What did you think of the family? Tell us, why don't you kind of work through with Christina some of the family?
Sure. So the Rivera family moved to Delaware from Mexico in order for their daughter Maribel to attend a school called the Ever School to receive some special education services. Maribel had a brain injury a year prior, correct me if I'm wrong, Christina, and they were looking for some special education for her. And when they first arrived in Delaware, I think in the first few pages of the book, we learned that Alma, the mother, is disappointed in what she found. She was expecting picket fences, white houses, and these beautiful pictures of probably suburbs, and what she found was very different. They ended up moving into this apartment complex with a number of other immigrant families, and they were very surprised at what they saw when they opened the door. It was run down, it was dilapidated in some places, and it was not their vision of what they thought America was.
And so this is the family we're meeting. And Christina, tell us a little bit about how you wanted to create the sketch of this family. You know, what you wanted us to feel as we followed their story.
Well, I immediately wanted to raise the reader's, you know, sympathy for them. But I also was very aware, you know, not right away necessarily, but as I was working through the many, many drafts of this book, I was aware that I wanted their American dream to be thwarted. And so, as Megan said, you have that sense from the very beginning of the book. You know, they arrive in this place, and Alma, she's had this fantasy that the apartment building is going to look, as she says, the way it does in American movies. And they get there, and it's, you know, there's trash in the weeds, and there's a chain link fence, and it's just sort of not everything she wanted it to be. And I think you have the sense from the beginning then, you know, that they're not going to get all of the things that they want out of this experience. And yet there's, you know, there's moments of like real hope and levity, and you see their closeness as a family as the book goes on. But from the opening pages, kind of that was the tone I wanted to set, you know, that maybe things were not going to go well for them necessarily.
Well, there was always that sense of foreboding with the way that you opened it, but nevertheless, I had hoped that things were going to go well, that Maribel was going to get better, that Arturo, the dad, was going to, you know, at least maintain with the work. It wasn't the kind of work he was qualified for. He went to go work sorting mushrooms in the dark for 10 hours a day, really drudgery work, but as he says, it was a job. And Christina, how often, you know, do you find, no matter where someone's from, they're like Arturo? They come here, they're overqualified, but they're going to be willing to sort mushrooms in the dirt in the dark for 10 hours if that's what it takes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, he has his own construction business in Mexico that he leaves behind, and he comes because this is one of the only jobs where he can find who will sponsor their visas. And he's standing in the dark sorting mushrooms, as you said. And you know, that's actually a true thing, that across the state line in Pennsylvania, there are these mushroom farms that actually produce, I think, like half the mushrooms in the country. And those are basically the conditions that people work under. And, you know, he's not just doing it for himself and because he wanted to leave Mexico, of course. He's doing it because they're really here for the purpose of getting Maribel, their daughter, the kind of care and education that she needs in order to get better and recover from her brain injury. And so, you know, it's also became one of those stories of like the lengths that a parent will go to for their child.
And then there became the story with Mayor, a young boy who came from a family. I thought Mayor's family was so interesting because Mayor is a boy who's struggling at school, bullied. Some of the things that people say to him are really vicious, really sad. I'm so naive. I find myself reading this kind of stuff, hoping that this isn't happening in real life. I know it is.
Some of those are things that happened to me.
do you want to share? Just share one or two if you then could then, Christina.
Well, just that, you know, the kids at school call him a pan, for example, short for Panamanian. They tell him to crawl back through the canal. You know, those are the kinds of things that kids used to say to me when I was in high school. I remember having a friend over one time or some friends, and there was like, my parents had a Tupperware full of like baking soda in the freezer, you know, to just keep it fresh. And a friend of mine saw it and was like, oh my gosh, is that cocaine? Are you related to Noriega? You know, just those kind of taunting things that I think, and giving them to Mayor was my way of kind of unloading them from myself.
Well, so Mayor struggles. He's got an older sibling, though, who doesn't. And that's kind of the hard part, because another aspect of the book that, as it unfolds, is the question on, I don't know, of cultural assimilation, but you've got the question of, you know, young children as they grow up in immigrant families and they become more, I guess, Americanized, popular here. His older brother's doing better than he is, I think, or sort of fitting in better. And then his brother starts to kind of want to detach a little from family cultural institutions. And why did you paint that picture as well, Christina? Tell me about that.
Yeah, his brother was a character who I added late, actually, but he does a lot for the book. I think he's sort of a minor character, but his name is Enrique, and was a soccer star in high school, you know, popular, and has now away at college on a soccer scholarship, and his father couldn't be prouder of him. And part of Mayor's issue is that he can never live up to his brother. He's always sort of living in Enrique's shadow. But there's a scene where Enrique comes back from college for Christmas for just a short time, and while he's there, he's very critical of their life back at home. And, you know, you get the sense, as you said, that he's kind of detaching and pulling away and is, you know, wants a different kind of life for himself. And I think that's just, you know, that's part of the first-generation sort of dilemma. I don't know. I think I got that partly from my own experience of, I remember I left for college. My parents are still in Delaware, and so when I left, they were there, and I went to school at Northwestern in Chicago. And so I went away to school, and then I remember coming home for one of those early vacations. You know, and I thought I was so fancy because I had, like, learned all of this stuff, and it was that great thing that happens when you go to college where your brain kind of explodes with all of the information that you're getting and all of the stuff that you're putting in there. And so I went home, and I was, like, arguing at the dinner table with my dad about something or other, and I was just so righteous about it. You know, I was just sure that I knew what I was talking about, and he kind of, you know, just sort of put me in my place a little bit. It's like, you know, you think you're so great now that you've gone off and are doing this thing. And I think that's probably true to some extent for anybody who goes away and experiences a different kind of, you know, version of life and then comes home and sees things from a different perspective. But I think it's probably all the more true for, you know, a child of an immigrant who, you know, they are coming from a certain kind of experience and a certain kind of life, and you are trying to forge your own way and make your own path. And so I think the stuff with Enrique was kind of cold from my own experience.
But, you know, for me, the reason I asked about how we all can try to help any person, whether it's an immigrant or not, but especially immigrants, feel like they are making a home in our own communities with us, is because maybe what happens with Enrique is natural. It's sort of a progression of life for immigrant families. But I also wonder, if an immigrant family comes here, they're struggling to sort of make a life, to feel like they've got a home, to fit in, and a child grows up and sort of becomes more Americanized, has American friends, you don't want that child to feel like, well, the family way where I come from is wrong, or it's something to get away from. You want people to be able to try to stitch all of it together. And you, with your own background, Panamanian, but also with a mom from New Jersey, I'm sure, as you said, you've experienced that push and pull. So that's what it had me thinking as a reader, that I hope we're not creating communities where kids grow up feeling like, well, I've got to get away from that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the more that you can create any sort of environment where you feel like all of those things are okay. Like, for example, I'm thinking of when my dad came, he came in the early 70s to the United States. And when he came, he didn't know very much English. He knew some, but, you know, he was still working to improve it. And then at home, he had been here, I don't know, a few years, and he and my mom ended up falling in love and getting married, and they had me and my brother and sister. But when we were growing up, my dad didn't speak Spanish to us at home. And this is, you know, my mom's from New Jersey, but she's fluent in Spanish also. And she was a Spanish teacher, and now she works as a translator. So they easily could have spoken Spanish to us when we were growing up. And I think that the reason he didn't is just that the environment then and the culture of the country at that time was such that he didn't feel that he could, you know, that he felt like being American meant that he had to speak English, but to the exclusion of speaking Spanish. You know, and I think he felt like it was really important for him to learn English, but I wish that he could have felt also like it was equally acceptable for him to be at home and speak Spanish to us.
Okay, well, I was going to get to a break and put this question after this, but I'm going to work this in now because I got an email from a listener named Andrew who is responding to some of the characters in the book and said, well, why would anyone come to this country legally or not if they don't speak English? Christina, I'm sure you've been asked that question before. I know there's a segment of this country that thinks that everyone must speak English, learn English immediately, assimilate, speak English at home, speak English at school. But how would you answer Andrew's question?
I mean, from the book's perspective, you know, Alma and Arturo come because they want their child to get better. And they've been told by their doctors in Mexico that there's this particular school where they can come. And they wait the appropriate amount of time and they do all of their paperwork so that they can be able to come legally and bring Maribel to the United States so that she can get better. So then what happens, and I made a point of this, is that Alma, Maribel's mother, goes to a community center while she's here. And, you know, it doesn't take her long to find her way there so that she can try to learn English. And she, you know, I think she wants very badly to feel like she can stand in that line at the grocery store and communicate, and so that she can help Maribel with her homework and do all of the things that would make this feel like, you know, a place where she can belong. But it's, you know, I mean, I think it's really hard to learn a new language, and a lot of people try and are trying, but I don't think that, you know, like in my dad's case, I wish that he had felt like he was able to hold on to his Spanish and pass that along to us at the same time that he was learning a new language and trying to assimilate in a new culture.
We're going to get a short break. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more about Maribel's story along with Mayor. I'm going to ask Megan Mack, our producer, if she, like me, was thinking they shouldn't get together because this is not going to end well, you know, because there was a bit of a Romeo and Juliet push and pull, and Mayor, who was a struggling young boy, was smitten with Maribel. So let's go ahead and take a break, come back with Christina Enriquez, who is the author of The Book of Unknown Americans, a book that landed on the New York Times 100 Notable Books list, and a book that tells the story not just of an immigration system, but of immigrants, of people, of human beings trying to make it here and create something that feels like home. More with her next. Coming up in our second hour, we're talking about the new Unite Rochester Challenge. You might have heard about the Unite Rochester Initiative, and it has taken on an even more urgent meaning as communities around the world are asking what it means to be united, truly united, in the wake of Paris. Let's talk about that next hour right here on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, presenting NPR's From the Top with Christopher O'Reilly and RPO Music Director Ward Stair, Sunday, January 17th. Tickets available at rpo.org.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Author Christina Enriquez is on the line with us. She's coming to Rochester tomorrow night to the Rush Reese Library 7 p.m. free program and lecture about her book, The Book of Unknown Americans. Megan Mack, producer of Connections, is in studio with me. Megan and I read the book, and we're talking to the author about it. And Ellen writes to us and wants to know, she says, great discussion. What does Christina think the biggest misconceptions are about immigrants in this country?
I mean, it seems to me the biggest misconception, I think, is that there's a single story, you know, and essentially that we tend to cling to these sort of myths around immigration and these narratives about what the immigrant experience actually is. And then, you know, we don't uncover kind of the very particular stories that are behind all of that. So I think that's one of the biggest myths. And, you know, in general, and again, I don't know, I can't tell if I just think this based on listening to the Republicans or to much of the media, but just it seems like in general there's a misconception that, you know, that immigrants are somehow a threat to the American way of life, which I really don't think that's true. I think there's so many people here who are contributing and who just, you know, they want to lead decent lives and who really love this country.
Yeah, as a point of fact, the immigrant crime rate is roughly half what it is the general population. That's just a point of fact. So it's good to counter, you know, sort of stereotypes with facts sometimes. As we talked to Christina Enriquez. Now, Megan Mack, producer, I was thinking, you know, I actually thought of Mayor and Maribel in two different ways. I thought maybe a kind of an interest, a relationship could spark Maribel's brain, could help her sort of bounce back a little because she's still struggling with memory, with, you know, basically daily interaction. And so I had this hope. But then I thought, boy, this might end badly. What did you think?
I agree. I think there was a lot of foreshadowing throughout the entire book. And I think to some extent their relationship did help her improve. And she mentioned to him many times, "You're the only one who understands me. You're the only one who thinks I can do anything." And he's the only person to which she really opened up. So I think that did help her. But I think their relationship overall was symbolic of the Rivera story in general. And Christina, that's something I wanted to ask you. Was that intentional? They had a rough start, things blossomed a bit, and then they had a difficult ending. I don't want to give away anything to our listeners, but was that intentional, Christina? Did you mean for that to be sort of a micro aspect of the bigger story?
I don't think so. I don't think that I was creating that kind of echo on purpose necessarily, although I guess the one part of it that I did think was that, you know, Maribel and Mayor are both outcasts in their own ways. You know, if this is really a book about home and about that sense of belonging, I think with each other, they're both trying to find that sense of belonging. You know, like I think Maribel is on the margins of society because she has this brain injury, you know, and she's been classified now as a child who has special needs, and Maribel is on the outskirts because, you know, he's not good at anything at school and because everybody makes fun of him and all of these other things. And I think then with each other, they really find that sense of belonging and almost, you know, a feeling of being at home with each other. And so I was really aware of that theme and how maybe that theme was going to echo with some of the other themes.
I'm going to grab another listener. Comment. You wanted to ask about Garrett as well, Megan?
Yes, go
ahead.
Well, Garrett, I think when you first meet him in the book, you think he might be a minor character, but his presence is a major thread throughout the entire narrative and ends up, I guess you could argue, causing some of the issues in the end. Again, I don't want to give anything away to our listeners, but Christina, I saw him as the personification of hate, just the bigger, maybe what people in society today, their perception of immigrants and all the negative perceptions they have. And how big of an influence was he when you were writing the book? Was he always a major character in your mind?
I think he was. You know, I felt like I actually had a mandate from an editor who read the book early on who said to me, "You have to have plot from page one," which was a little bit of a scary notion for me because I don't consider plot necessarily my strength. And so I put Garrett in near the beginning of the book, hoping to generate just for myself a little bit of that, you know, propulsive plot. And then as I was writing, he kind of became a more, you know, a more major force and a more major presence over all of their lives. But it's interesting because then what I felt like is I wanted to also, you know, I also wanted to humanize him to some extent. So he is kind of that evil, terrible character, but what I hope is that by the end of the book, you also at least have some sense of kind of where he's coming from and how he has become the way he is. And, you know, you see in certain ways how he's a product of his environment. And so, yeah, I don't know. He's like a terrible guy, but in certain ways I felt like I wanted people to at least approach a sense of understanding him at least.
We're talking to Christina Enriquez, who is the author of The Book of Unknown Americans, and I want to ask one more question that I'm going to try to ask it in a way that doesn't give everything about the ending away. But Megan and I actually had a discussion before the hour began about the ending of the book, and I don't think we necessarily, you know, we didn't disagree vehemently about one point, but I raised a possibility that, Meg, you said you hadn't considered.
I hadn't considered, no.
All right. So I'm going to try to ask this in a way that doesn't give it away. But listeners, again, Megan and I are being very honest when we tell you we both were really moved by The Book of Unknown Americans. So I don't want to spoil it, but I do think if you want to pick it up and read it, you should. There is a development for Maribel at the end. At least some hope, I guess. And the discussion Megan and I had was that sparked by the notion of home and in her mind a return to home, or was that sparked by something else? And so, Christina,
I don't think so. I didn't see it as that, although, you know, I think that aspect of it is hopeful. You know, I will tell you that after my mom read the book, after it was published, she called me and she said, "What is wrong with you?"
Yes, because, you know, she'd probably been crying so much. Had she been crying?
Why can't you write a happy ending? And I'll just leave it at that. But I felt like I want that emotional response when I read a book or when I go to a movie or when I listen to a piece of music. You know, I really want to have that emotional connection. And I wanted to give readers that, too. So, you know, it's tough in certain ways, but there is some hope at the end of the book.
There
and
is,
I don't think it's necessarily just because of what lays ahead for them, I guess, so to speak. I think there really is kind of a breakthrough for Maribel, and you see that because of everything that's come before.
It's not just because of a return to home, I guess.
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think she's sort of, to me, in my mind, has just sort of gotten to that point naturally, not because she's anticipating, you know, what's about to come.
Okay. So Megan was right. So Megan, you were wrong when you failed the one-word quiz earlier. But
I've redeemed myself.
You're one and one.
She's
not
one
bad.
And one.
I'll take it.
Greg writes to the program and wants to know, does the author see a parallel between how we treat immigrants and how we are treating refugees?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, to me, it's really about how we're just treating human beings. You know, I mean, you can label people. You can say someone's an immigrant. You can say someone is a refugee. You can say illegal immigrant, undocumented immigrant. You can say asylum seeker. You know, any label that you put on someone, they're still just a human being. And I think that's the way I see it. And because I see it that way, it's all interrelated. You know, our intolerances toward one people lead over into our intolerances to another, and on the other side of it, you know, our compassion does the same thing. And so the more that you can exercise that compassion for one group of people, I believe the more it's going to filter over into any other group.
What about the question of labels? You just brought it up because we have heard people, we've heard some debate, those who are concerned about illegal, undocumented, alien, anchor baby was a term we heard this summer. Those kind of labels, how much do you think those can be hurtful? Do we overplay, you know, how damaging labels can be, Christina, or do they have power?
No, I think they do. You know, and I'm somebody who's coming from, I mean, my life's work is about words, and that words matter, and the very specific words that you use matter and make a difference. I think, you know, they might not be in conscious ways, but we internalize those things. We absorb those things, and they change how we view people and how we think about other people.
I want to grab, before we go here, I want to mention that, Christina, you have started a Tumblr, and we were admiring it before the hour began, and First of all, as I pull up some notes that we made from it, that Megan was making before the hour began, tell us what the Tumblr is and what you're trying to do with it.
Yeah, the website is unknownamericans.tumblr.com, and Tumblr does not have an E. And it was really started, I started it because at some point while I was writing this book, you know, there's all these people who live in this apartment building, and all of them get a chance at some point throughout the story to tell their own, you know, tell about their own journey of coming to the United States and what their experience is like now and about what their home was like that they left behind. And I guess I felt like, for me, that was much of the spirit of the book, was giving all of these people a chance to be heard. And so I started this website, this Tumblr, when the book was published, as another place for people to share their real-life stories of coming to the United States. And it's open to anybody. You don't have to be from a country in Latin America, and it doesn't even have to be your story. It could be a family member's story. The first story that's up there was my dad's real-life story, and I just talked to him about it, and I typed it up, and I posted it up there, and I put a picture of him from when he came and, like, the early 70s, and, you know, it's funny, he has this mustache, and he's very wiry, and it's like a funny picture of him to me. But it's just sort of an ongoing thing, and whenever I get submissions, and the submission instructions are on there, they're very easy. You can just type up something. It doesn't even have to be something long. It can be just a favorite memory or anything that you want to share about coming to the United States, and then I post them up there as kind of an ongoing way, you know, to me, the antidote to some of the negativity that you hear sometimes about immigrants is to hear those ordinary stories. And I think the more of them that we can hear, the better. And so it's just another place that hopefully people can hear them and share them.
It's awesome. I really love it. I love how simply it's laid out. It's unknownamericans.tumblr.com. I'm going to read a couple that Megan pulled, but Megan, you could have basically pulled just any, wasn't it cool?
And they were incredible, all of them. All of them are wonderful stories. And it goes back to, it's not just one story. Being an immigrant is not characterized by one single thing.
So let me read a couple that Megan pulled. This is Ariola from Guatemala, written by the mom. The mother's journey, and by the way, the pictures are great. You see the people, you know, it's really beautiful. The mom's journey in this case with her husband and three sons took 11 years, worked jobs that she said were painful, and says she hopes the children don't lose their identity, but she's thankful with life. And she said, quote, there is not a big difference between all the people of different nationalities that come to this country. Then there's a woman named Tamar who emigrated from the Republic of Georgia in 1999 at the age of 22, arrives in New York City, speaks no English, and her goal was to study and then eventually go home. And she had left Georgia because there were basically no jobs, and the jobs that were there didn't really pay anything. So she ends up earning a BA in music from Rutgers. She's pursuing an MA in music education. She's going to teach. She married her husband, who is an immigrant from Spain. They have two kids, and she wants her children to be trilingual and know all of the cultures, American, Georgian, Spanish. And she said, quote, I do not know when I stopped feeling like a foreigner. It was a progressive metamorphosis, a process of becoming happy and satisfied here, of feeling at home. Was that your emphasis, Megan?
It was.
Let's see, look at you. See, Megan keyed in on the home thing. But Christina, maybe that's a great place to wrap it up. I thought that's really beautiful because that took us right back to your book. The question of building, you can build a house, you can live in an apartment, but it's different than feeling at home. And that's exactly what Tamara is saying on your Tumblr.
Yeah, I love that. And it's like, you know, the part of the reason that I populated the book with all of these characters, too, is that they become each other's family. You know, in so many cases, they've left family members behind in the countries that they have fled from, or, you know, and they find each other. And so in that, again, sometimes it's a geographical place, but sometimes home is really a notion of something that you find with somebody else, you know, with another person or another group of people or a community. And I think, you know, that's what I was trying to infuse the book with, was that kind of sense. And it's been amazing to go around and talk about the book. And, like, I just did an event last week where all of these high school kids came, and they were in this program called the Newcomer Program. And there were, like, 90 of them, you know, and some of them are just learning English. And, you know, they saw so much of themselves in the book. And I think, you know, it's always sort of amazing to be reminded then of, I was just trying to tell a good story, you know, but it's really meant something.
I love that story. I love that story. I love the fact that this book is ending up in high schools. Parents out there, don't be surprised if you've got a kid in high school, if they come home with the Book of Unknown Americans, and if they do, steal it from them when they're done and you can read it. Christina Enriquez, we've loved the hour with you. We will see you in Rochester tomorrow night, 7 p.m., a free lecture and presentation from Christina about the book and about these stories at the Rush Reese Library. That's on the University of Rochester River Campus. Their library is there, bringing Christina in, and it's free tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. See you there, and thank you, Christina.
Thank you for having me.
That's Christina Henriquez. Thank you, Megan Mack, producer.
Thank you.
A lot of reading in it, I bet.
I enjoyed it.
I did, too. And thanks as well to Katie Fest that we'll see you tomorrow night at Rush Reese as well.
Yes, thanks for having me.
All right, short break. And from immigration to uniting Rochester, what it means, and we'll also talk refugees as well next hour.